individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. And in the studio with me today on a Tuesday, not a Wednesday, not last Wednesday, because I screwed that one up. It's supposed to be tomorrow, but I screwed that one up. I've got the innumerable Nick Nugent. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, Dave.
You sure?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I got you on the right day finally. I got no mental health issues. You know, it is today.
Well, the nice thing was I had everything ready, so there was no stress trying to make sure it was ready at the last minute.
I love you, man. Oh, boy. But today is Leonard Isaacson Zappala.
Yes.
Wow.
And I can pretty well tell you at the beginning here, this is going to stretch into two episodes. We only get so far today if we make it all the way as the Great Serum Run to Nome.
Okay.
And his life in Fairbanks is another hour's worth of great story.
Last Wednesday of the month.
Of this month?
Yeah.
We could do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's Joni. Sorry, that's Joni. Let me look at the schedule. Anyway.
Okay, because we can always do it first of February.
True. Go ahead.
Okay, well, Leonard Zappala was born in Skaboten, Storfjord, Norway, in 1877, September 14th, to be exact. His father, Isaac, was a Swede. His mother, Anna Hendriksdotter, was Norwegian. And he lived 500 miles north of the Arctic Circle. So Leonard had plenty of opportunity to grow up as a pretty hardy young man. And by age 12, he was working on his father's fishing boat and the family forge. He chose to become a blacksmith. And to that end, in 1897, he moved to Christiania, which is Oslo now. He was also following his childhood sweetheart, Margaret, who had moved ahead of him. Well, he went back to Skerjoy.
Those are interesting names, and you're doing great pronouncing them.
I almost bite my tongue sometimes. And he opened a business there and tried to save money to bring Margaret there. Well, Margaret sadly died a year later in Christiana. Causes aren't listed, but she died very suddenly. No pre-existing illness that anyone knew.
Wow.
So a little bit of a tragedy there that he started out with. Well, a year after that, maybe because of the losses, he was feeling a little bit footloose. And a fellow Norwegian, Jafet Lindeberg, who had struck it rich in Nome and owned the Pioneer Mining Company, Lindeberg had been one of the reindeer herders brought for the government's plan to introduce reindeer herding to Alaska. He had stayed on to prospect, and he came back to Norway quite a wealthy man. So he was the owner, Lindeberg was owner of the Pioneer Mining Company. He planned to return to Nome in 1900, and looking at a future without Margaret, Leonard approached Lindeberg about coming along. And Leonard's reputation was such that Lindeberg actually fronted him $300 to travel on. He knew Leonard was a guy he wanted. That's pretty good when you're that young.
Have
someone hire you and pay all your travel expenses shortly after they've met you. So he arranged a job with the Pioneer Mining Company. They left for the U.S. There are actually three young men came. On March 8th, 1900, arrived at Ellis Island in April, as well as a new country. He actually acquired a new name. That happened when the Immigration and Naturalization agent recorded his name as Cipolla rather than the family spelling of Cipolla with an O. They crossed country in 10 days by train, found Seattle in just a crazy uproar from everybody trying to get to Nome. They waited for the sea ice to clear in Nome and ended up staying in Seattle till May 24th. Well, they reached Dutch Harbor May 31st. On June, they reached Nome. But a rumor of smallpox kept them on the ship till June 24th. And I think that's kind of interesting that if you look at what the mining season was and how early they left and the amount of time, he got there basically with
at the
work,
beginning.
Yeah, and the work year was half over by the time they actually got on site.
Wow.
He was fortunate to have a job waiting because that gave him a place to stay, which a lot of people were just in tents. His first job was using a team of horses to pull a scraper at the mine. He'd never driven horses before, didn't know how to harness them, but he was an incredibly quick learner and hard worker. And by the time freeze-up came, he was given a permanent year-round job. He wasn't given it, he'd earned it. And he was watchman at Discovery Claim on Anvil. His co-worker and skiing partner was Carl Lohman. And if you remember, the Lohmans rose to quite a bit of fame in Nome. They were owners of the Lohman Reindeer Company and the Lohman Brothers Photography. Well, Cipolla then had his first introduction to sled dogs when Lindeberg bought 11 fine Malamutes and two mixed breed dogs in December of 1900. And with this team, Cipolla and three others went off to prospect in Newfound. They were gone for 2 months, endured blizzards, temperatures 40 to 60 below. They returned to Nome when supplies finally ran low and some of the people on the trip were beginning to have issues with frostbite. Leonard later wrote, this discovery that went up to was Cougar Rock, and he later wrote in 1955 that the discovery was a fraud. There was no gold there. And Leonard, though, was not a man to chase every new strike. He believed in getting where you were, working, getting ahead, and he'd seen too many guys run off to chase a strike and basically come back with their pockets turned inside out because they had nothing left. He started becoming more well-known in Nome. He brought his brothers, Asel and Sigurd, in 1902, 1903, they were all members and founded the Nome Ski Club, which was Alaska's first ski club existing since 1901. Records indicate that the Cipolla brothers built the ski jump at Anvil Creek, and Leonard won the jumping event in 1903 and 1906. His best jump was 103 feet.
Wow.
Which if you look at, you know, if you think about today's Olympians, you probably have teenagers jumping farther than that.
Have a look at the equipment, the ramps they had.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of difference in what was going on, certainly. Leonard also was pretty well known for using a sail while on skis, and he could travel the distance from Dry Creek to Nome in just 13 minutes. He also started ski touring the more familiar he became with dogs, so he was really getting around. Skiing was rising in popularity as a recreation event, and Brother Asel opened a ski manufacturing business there and ended up also doing runners for dog sleds later. Well, Leonard became a naturalized citizen in 1906. He met his future wife, Constance van der Straaten, that year. She was a waitress for some of the big mining companies in the camps, which were supporting the ditch-building efforts. They married October 30th, 1909, in Nome. Well, this extensive ditch system, sort of like Davidson's Ditch, and all mining areas had some type of ditching to bring the water they needed for placer mining.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty extensive, and Leonard was given a team of 11 dogs, and he delivered supplies to the camps during early spring until snow was melted. He also made a lot of trips on behalf of the company around the Seward Peninsula, and he started to become known for rescue trips. In 1911, they had the first rescue that he was involved in that was recorded. He was taking Lewis Stevenson, a co-worker, to Hot Springs. And they were passed by Colonel Crimmins and Sergeant Bauer from Fort Davis, who had a really fine team. They had been acquired from the winner of the 1910 All-Alaska Sweepstakes. Another thing we should mention about Leonard, he was very involved as he was learning dogs to get better teams. He became very involved in some of the first breeds of sled dogs and actually was pretty much responsible for starting the Siberian Husky breed, which had been called Chukchis from their origin up to that point.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Rome was founded in 753 BC by Romulus, making it one of the oldest continuously occupied cities in Europe. Giraldo's hasn't been open nearly that long. However, since 1984, we have become the pasta capital of Fairbanks. From the stuffed cannelloni, to the eggplant parmigiana, to the fettuccine alfredo, Giraldo's has established itself as the center of the pasta-loving universe of Fairbanks for millenniums to come.
KFAR weather.
Snow likely today. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. High temperatures reach up to 21. Southwest winds, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of snow tonight. Lows dip down to about 11 below. Partly cloudy skies. Highs level off around 3 below tomorrow. Partly cloudy skies. About an inch of snow today. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. David Pruse in the studio here with Nick Nugent. We're talking about Leonard Isaksson Sapala. Those are very Norwegian names.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. You know, as I was reading different things about Leonard, if you made a very, very accurate movie that depicted his life, most people would watch it and not believe half of what happened.
That's why we're explaining it on the air.
It absolutely is. Well, when they got to the Hot Springs Roadhouse, they found Sergeant Bauer pretty badly frozen and he needed immediate attention. The winds were at 50 miles an hour and minus 40 degrees. Leonard loaded him into the sled, took him back over the mountain to Fort Davis, and Bauer ended up being hospitalized for months. Of course, the treatment for this type of frosting wasn't as good then as it is now. It did take longer, but that's still, if you think about how the physical shape he must have been in to require months of recovery.
Yeah.
Leonard did a good job. Well, in 1913, Leonard was the most experienced musher with the Pioneer Mining Company. He was interested in developing sled dog racing, but
But he's already been in this country 13 years.
Yes.
Already.
Yeah.
It's going by fast.
It really has.
We haven't got into the flying part.
Well.
But we will.
No.
He's not a pilot. Anyway, go ahead.
No, he got hauled around by a lot of famous pilots,
yeah.
Though. So being their most experienced guy in 1914, Leonard, Victor Anderson, and Lewis Stevenson were involved in acquisitions of dogs for Roald Amundsen's 1914 expedition. He had been going around buying dogs and breeding his own Siberians, descended from the Chukchi strains. To this point, most of the working dogs were Malamutes or Malamute and other breeds. And at some point prior to the winter of 1913-14, traders had been bringing dogs from the Anadyr River region in Siberia, and two females, Nellie and Victor Anderson's Dolly, are considered the foundation of today's Siberians.
Wow.
So Leonard was right there with what, it, to us, seems like a dog that must have been here forever. Well, as Amundsen wanted Siberians, they had a good reputation. They were fast, strong. They were easy to care for. They would eat pretty much anything. And best off for a man operating a dog team out in the middle of nowhere, they weren't prone to be fighters. So they weren't always getting torn up in dog team scraps and being made unusable. Well, that tried, though, his attempt was put off. World War I was right on the horizon, and Amundsen couldn't raise the funding to go, and the dog team was basically given to Leonard's care. A lot of the mushers, such as Scotty Allen, who was pretty famous for winning the All-Alaska sweepstakes repeatedly, were really impressed with Leonard's team, and they encouraged him to enter the 1914 sweepstakes, which he did. He decided to try the Loyal Order of the Moose burden race from Nome to Point Safety and return, and that burden was 100 pounds of weight or a passenger. So the race was 42 miles, September 9th, 1914, and he won his first race, the dogs performing well on the return, and the return was done in 3 hours 32 minutes, which was pretty quick for that distance and the equipment of the day. The sweepstakes, though, unfortunately didn't go so well. Leonard's lack of experience in running a race showed, not his dog handling. So he had trouble setting up his caches in the best place and figuring out sleep schedules and just what to do. Out on the trail, his dog Topcock took a wrong turn when a blizzard blew up. The team was unfamiliar with the area. Normally, Leonard would run his dogs later. He always ran his dogs over the race trail more than once so that kind of mistake wouldn't happen again. I think it's really what I picked up out of a lot of this is how close a good musher has to trust and work with their dogs. You know, more than if you're not a musher like I am not, you just don't realize the commitment that takes to realize that dog may be outthinking me right now.
Yes.
Well, a gentleman named Iron Man Johnson, Alan, began to run away with the race. Leonard withdrew due to the combination of the damage done to his dog's feet while they were running off the trail. He didn't want to injure them. This was Johnson's last All-Alaska sweepstakes, and he and his team retired to California, and they settled near Truckee. And Johnson participated in a race there, which was his last race, which featured Jack London as Grand Marshal. They were exhibited at the World's Fair in San Francisco. And in that fall, Johnson had several jobs with the movie studios up in the Sierras, letting them film stock footage of dog teams for use in future movies. 1914, then, Amundsen had postponed his expedition due to lack of funding, the threat of war, and Lindbergh wrote to Amundsen telling him, well, you know, we're spending a lot of money keeping your dogs here. Amundsen basically told them, you know, go ahead and use them however you need to in business. So they were able to keep the dog team intact. Olaf Svensson brought eight more Siberians from Kamchatka. They went to the pioneer kennels. So all of the all from these lines came Togo, who Seppala later described as the best dog by far. And the Seppala dogs, except for Nelly, actually belonged to the mining company and were housed at Little Creek, where the Seppalas live. Leonard was a ditch tender in the summer, and that's what he did for the FE company when he moved to Fairbanks. He lived up near Chattanooga. Well, these years, mid to late teens, dog sled racing was improving its methods, its equipment. Efforts were being made to lighten the equipment canvas instead of leather harnesses. And one of the things I read, they would use ivory buttons and toggles because they were lighter than the metal harness equipment they had in the day. They used aluminum in place of iron or steel when possible. And a gentleman, Paul Kegstad, was a good friend, fellow racer, and he provided Leonard with a lot of advice on how to rest and feed dogs. That seemed to be his specialty. He didn't have the best team out there, but he really knew how to care for them. So Leonard's brother made him a new sled. It was shorter and had extended runners to stand on and a driving bow. Those were new features at that time. Most of the sleds ended at the rear stanchion, and they had what looked like saw handle grips that you would hold on to. So the musher was constantly running along, which limited the team to the speed the musher could run. Well, the 1915 race then commenced on Barrack Square at Fort Davis and would be a mass start. They started on Wednesday, April 15th. After the first 24 hours, the teams were all in good shape, and Sepp and Kegstad chose to rest away from the checkpoint, and they had a very strict schedule. They didn't want their dogs disturbed by the other teams. On Thursday morning, the race was close. The top four teams were covered by less than 2 hours. The weather was good. Sepla took the lead between Candle and Council. Scotty Allen took the lead again while Leonard made it look like his dogs were giving out.
Ew.
Yeah.
He's messing with them.
He's starting to use he's learned some strategy by this time. He understands that you can't just run the dogs full blast constantly. But instead of resting at a little townsite mining camp called Boston, he pushed on to Council, which was only 60 miles from Nome. Now Scotty had to respond, but he was no longer running his own race or at his own pace. On the run to Nome, Sepla increased his lead to an hour by the time they arrived at safety. He entered the finish line 3:45 on Saturday, his winning time 78 hours, 44 minutes, and 57 seconds, the third fastest time of the 10 races to that point. Really pretty remarkable for your second race. He started with 16 dogs, and all 16 were still running in the race when he finished.
Wow.
Mining at Nome became larger in scale around this time. More water was needed, so the ditching became more and more extensive. Leonard was a ditch supervisor then at a camp known as Cape Horn. That was 15 miles up the Nome River. And he held that position from the mid-teens to 1927. Supplies were moved there by dog year-round. In the winter, the dogs would pull sleds. It was close to the old railroad, which had been abandoned, and in the summer they had carts with wheels, and the dogs would pull those up to the camp. So tragedy did strike on October 15th when his brother Sigurd was killed in a cabin fire, which also took the life of Olaf Kassen, who lived a few days but passed. The community was kind of saddened, or very saddened by that. They were both very popular guys. And, of course, you know, if you were Leonard's brother.
Yeah, everyone knew you.
Yeah, everybody knew you. So Leonard entered a few races that winter. He entered races at Solomon on the peninsula and one at Ruby, which ran from Ruby to Long and returned.
It's interesting how each community had their own race.
They did. And it was interesting, too, that out of all these separate races, most of them were run by local guys who were doing something with their, basically
winter.
Their work dogs.
Yeah.
And their winter. I believe, from what I can tell, Sepla was one of the very first men that traveled to other races.
Yeah. A circuit.
Exactly. And he did not have an F-250 with a nice dog box on the back.
Or a Cessna, you know,
no,
310.
Not a bit of that.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're 907-458-TALK. 907-458-8255. We're going to have some bumper music, some Fox News, some state news, some commercials and weather. Then we'll be back.
Is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Last night for former President Donald Trump in the Iowa caucuses, he got first place. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in second. In third, former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley. On the Fox News channel, Haley says her campaign is looking forward to the New Hampshire primary next week.
We're going to continue to talk to people, but we know that that gave us the strength coming out of Iowa. We're going to get even stronger in New Hampshire going to South Carolina.
Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy suspending his campaign. He's throwing his support behind Donald Trump. Texas experiencing frigid temperatures in the city of Austin. They're warning residents to look out for one another during the freeze. Travis County Judge Andy Brown.
Please take the same precautions that we've been asking you to take over the past several days. Protect your people, pets, plants, and pipes.
These low temperatures expected Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. The wind chills could make it feel like the single digits in parts of central Texas. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska's news source reports a multi-agency cleanup effort is underway after an unknown quantity of natural gas leaked from a North Slope pipeline, according to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. In a DEC press release, Harvest Alaska, the company in charge of the compromised Point Thompson export pipeline, reports 11,550 gallons, that's 275 barrels, is the most amount of fuel the approximately 22-mile pipeline is capable of leaking. Harvest Alaska officials learned of the leak on Saturday night after a leak detection alarm went off. On Sunday, a ground and air search for the leak's exact location led to an aircraft spotting the leak site about 35 miles east of Prudhoe Bay, the release went on to say. We took immediate action by shutting down the pipeline and promptly notified the relevant federal and state agencies. Andrew Limmer, Harvest Alaska's regional vice president, wrote in an emailed statement, "Currently, we are conducting a thorough assessment of the incident, which occurred approximately 35 miles east of Prudhoe Bay, and response personnel have begun cleanup operations."
Streaming live online at 660.com.
Nowadays, nothing is more important than saving money. And the best way to do that is with the radio station's 50-50 Friday offer. Every week, a different special from a different local business offering gift certificates at half price. All from your favorite restaurants, shops, and events. So what's this week's 50-50 Friday offer?
This week's 50-50 Friday offer is from Fairbanks Nissan. Redeem your certificate for a synthetic oil change for your car or light-duty truck. This service is normally $100, but this week, it's yours for just $50. It doesn't matter what make or model you drive, Fairbanks Nissan welcomes you. At this time of year, it's critical to keep up on your scheduled maintenance. So why not do it for half price? This offer from Fairbanks Nissan will sell out fast, so don't be late for the deal. Get your oil change for half price with this week's 50-50 Friday offer from Fairbanks Nissan.
Just log on to this station's website and click on that red 50-50 tag in the upper right-hand corner. Have your credit card ready and get ready to save big. 50-50 Friday, every Friday at 9 a.m. from the radio station.
Are you interested in recycling in our town? Come learn about recycling, waste management, and environmental cleanup in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. It's the Interior Alaska Solid Waste and Recycling Symposium, Friday, January 19th from 12 to 7 p.m. at the Carlson Center. There'll be vendor exhibits and presentations provided for businesses and residents. Find out our recycling options in Interior Alaska. This is free to the public, Friday, January 19th at the Carlson Center. For more information, call 907-455-4496. Presented by Golden Heart Waste Management.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent in the studio with me here. We're talking about Leonard Seppala.
Yes.
And he's on what I call the tour, the race tour. Mm-hmm. And he was probably the first one who did that.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, he didn't have a nice road and a fancy pick up with a good dog.
No F-350.
No airplanes.
Yeah, no airplanes.
And in fact, when he went to the race in Ruby, that was a 900-mile dog sled trip, round trip, to get to the race and back.
I, you know, maybe you'll explain this better, but I always thought he was that one guy, or one of the leaders of putting dogs in an airplane for transportation to a location and going from there.
I believe that came later after he got here.
Okay.
So Noam had been invited to send an entry, and Seppala was their choice. I kind of wonder if they weren't hoping he'd tire out his dogs and give somebody else a chance in the All-Alaska sweepstakes. So off he went. He went through Nulato. And a young man named Fred Stickman had heard that Leonard was coming through, and he went out and stood on the river ice for hours just to watch him go by. Fred later, he was so impressed, got so interested with dogs, he later became a fairly well-known name in the Fairbanks mushing community. Well, five teams started. Sep won with a pretty good performance on the return leg, and then it was back to Noam for the All-Alaska sweepstakes. This was 1916. The field was pretty strong. It was, though, the first time that Scotty Allen hadn't been in it. He was still on his way back from France, where he'd taken 400 dogs, 100 from Noam, to Europe for the Allies' military war effort. Well, they started then on April 11th, the traditional interval start this time, not the mass start of the year before. First quarter of the race, everybody ran together to the mining camp of Boston. Then early on Wednesday, the teams departed their rest stop, and by Gold Run, 28 miles from Candle, Leonard, Brown, and Iyer were within a minute of each other. Sep took a 30-minute rest and was first into Candle by 7 p.m. The weather deteriorated to blizzard conditions. The front runners waited out the storm at Candle and left in the morning. Brown left first, but by the time they hit their turnaround point to come back to Gold Run, Brown had two dogs in the sled, and second place was being contested between Delzin and Iyer, neither of which had what was called an Arctic dog. They had brought different types of dogs in from elsewhere just to run as racing dogs. Well, Seppala won 80 hours, 38 minutes. Delezens was second, and the Siberian dogs now have won three races in a row. So their capabilities as sled dogs is really showing. And they tend to be 2 hours ahead of the other mushers. So they're dominating their wins.
Yeah.
Dog sledding was rising in popularity. A lot of new events were coming. The Nome Kennel Club was approached in August 1916 by John Borden, the heir to the Borden condensed milk fortune, to hold a dog race, which would match the length of a marathon, 26 miles, 385 yards, and he left off a huge silver trophy for the Kennel Club to use as a traveling trophy. The first race was held in February 1917, and they were able to telephone in reports from many of the check stations, so it was almost a live coverage of the race, if you will. They won, and the winner made it in 1 hour, 54 minutes, and just about a half hour faster than the human equivalent. Iyer also won the shorter race in Solomon. Seppala skipped a few of the shorter races. The prize money was rather poor, and the short distance was really dominated by Iyer and these non-Alaskan dogs he had. They could last a short race, and they could do well.
Sprint dogs.
And this is, I think, you see the beginning of breeding dogs for
sprint races
and dogs for distance races.
Yeah.
So pretty early on. Well, in March 1917, Leonard was involved in an event which is kind of the lore of Northwest Alaska. On one morning, Seppala and Lewis had traveled to Dime Creek on business. Several miles north, Bobby Brown had gotten his clothing caught in the belt drive of a saw, and it pulled him into the saw, and he was taken inside with really horrific injuries. a fellow named Slim Rydeen went to Dime Creek for help and there met Zeppelin Stevenson. They were just ready to depart. They had everything all hooked up to the sled, and they took off to go see if they could help. They went back for the sawmill. A team set out from Dime Creek to break tail for Sepala. They were ahead of him, but when during the race, the team that was trying to break trail couldn't keep up with Sepala's team, so they had to just send them back to Dime Creek to break trail south down toward Council. Well, they reached the Candle Roadhouse and Hospital at 11 p.m. They'd traveled 58 miles in 7.5 hours carrying 3 adult men. They did pick up Brown. They got him to the hospital. He lived for 3 days. And the Nome paper, I've seen the picture of the headline on Newspapers, Inc., ran a one of those end-of-the-world size font headlines. Sepala is winner in 58-mile race for life. And there was a woman wrote a poem about it, which was set to music and became a very popular song of its era. And it was Sepala, the musher who can outrun death.
Wow.
Well, the All-Alaska sweepstakes then were going to be run on Monday, April 9th. The news on the 4th was Sepala had several dogs unready due to his efforts for Brown, and he was resting them. So he wasn't quite as prepared this time. But on Good Friday, April 6th, the United States declared war on Germany. They went ahead and started the race. They thought it would just be good for local morale with the war coming up, and it was early enough the race wouldn't disturb the war effort. The weather during that race turned to wind, ended up with a ground blizzard, and Leonard could not see all of his dogs. And, you know, that's pretty common today, especially when you're out west. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it shows you how much Leonard trusted his team that he'd go zipping along with them on these long-distance runs. He couldn't see all of his team, let alone the trail ahead, and had total trust in his leaders for getting where he needed to be. Well, one of the mushers had a line break, so his front six dogs were off and away. They found them later. It just wasn't working well, but Leonard slowed down to help his friend and was still doing okay. He arrived at Spruce Creek. There were no dogs there, which was a surprise, and the villagers helped the next day and found the dogs. They fed them, and all but one finished the race when the original musher picked them up, took them back, and all but one of them was okay to finish. There was the series, the All-Alaska Sweepstakes, 1917 was the last year. It had lasted from 1908 to 1917, and an age of racing in Nome was at an end. There was a 75th anniversary running in 1983, and a 100th anniversary running in 2008. The 1910 record still stood after the 1983 race. It was not broken until 2008 by Mitch Seavey.
Wow.
That's a name probably you remember hearing a lot. Yeah. Well, by 1920, virtually all the dogs, working dogs in Nome, belonged to the mining company kennel. Leonard kept up a pretty good breeding program, adding Siberian dogs as possible. He really was building some good lines. Two events that year engaged the citizens of Nome. Roald Amundsen arrived after postponing his expedition till 1918. He battled the ice of the Northeast Passage for 2 years. Just 9 days after Amundsen departed, the U.S. Army Air Corps Alaska Flying Expedition, the Black Wolves, which we had as an episode probably a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we did.
Arrived in Nome. And back to Scotty Allen, we actually talked about Scotty a couple of years ago, talking about sled dogs in the military when he had taken the dogs to Europe. There's some pretty good pictures of the Black Wolf Squadron and Leonard in Nome, and they took him up for a hop around town. He was pretty well a celebrity. So in 1921, he provided support to the Alaska Railroad Commission to explore winter trails. His section ran from Manly Hot Springs through Rainy Pass to Anchorage. It was the longest of any of his travels, took 3.5 months, and of course he had to mush from Nome to Manly. During the fall, he took a trip to his homeland of Norway, returned with family to Seattle. In fall of 1922, he made trips to Nenana to deliver high-value items on behalf of the mining company.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Here's Dr. Tony Nima from Fairbanks Urology talking about prostate cancer screening.
If we know that they've got prostate cancer when it first starts, the disease is completely curable. You go, you get it fixed, and you move on with life, and you don't have to think about it again. If we find out later on and it's already spread, then the opportunity for curing the disease is no longer there. So the name of the game when it comes to cancer is finding out as early as possible.
So get screened today at Fairbanks Urology, corner of Cushman and Gaffney, online at fairbanksurology.com.
It's the final week of the Fairbanks Funny Festival starring the world-famous Sklar Brothers for one show only this Thursday night, January 18th, 7 p.m. at the Pioneer Park Theater. You've seen the Sklar Brothers in countless movies and TV shows. Now catch them live for one show only. Don't miss the hilarious Sklar Brothers. Tickets available at aktickets.com or the door, but don't wait. This show always sells out. The Fairbanks Funny Festival, brought to you by Good Cannabis in the Northgate Square, Zach's at Sophie Station, and your friends at the radio station.
KFAR weather.
Snow likely this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 21. West winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies. Tonight, chance of snow. Lows dip down to about 11 below. 1 to 2 inches of snow today. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent in the studio here.
And now we get to the event that most people would know, or at least have heard of, the Serum Run. There is certainly a lot of mythology around the Serum Run that it's enjoyable to read some good histories and find out what actually happened and how it went down. And it doesn't diminish from the story a bit. If anything, parts of it are more interesting than what we normally hear. Well, Nome had suffered fairly seriously in 1918 from the flu epidemic, and medical officials were worried about its susceptibility to epidemics and its remoteness and the problem of getting care in there during the winter. In 1925, Nome's population was up from the low of around 1,000 in 1918-1919, so there were 1,400 inhabitants. Gold mining was pretty much a large corporate venture. Nome received a few visitors headed out on expeditions to the Arctic. There was no knowing that, of course, they were about to receive the worldwide attention and be thrust on the world stage again, although this time the news was going to be due to the diphtheria epidemic, not gold. The town had only one doctor. That had been the case for a while. Dr. Curtis Welch, M.D., he diagnosed the first case in a 6-year-old native child on January 21st. On the 23rd, Nome Mayor George Menard telegraphed the Alaska delegate Dan Sutherland for federal assistance. There were only 75,000 units of antitoxin, which would not be sufficient to vaccinate everyone. On the 24th, they appointed a Board of Health with M.L. Summers. They imposed a quarantine. On the 26th, news was received from the Alaska delegate that immediate action was underway. Summers asked Sepala to prepare to travel to Nenana to pick up what serum might be available. So Step started off. He ran his dogs, which had really had less than normal trail time that year due to lack of snow early in the winter. There were 300,000 units of the serum in Anchorage. They were sent by train to Nenana. The hope had been shipped by air, but three aircraft in Fairbanks were disassembled, and the main stop of that idea, Noel Wien was outside, and the governor didn't trust any pilot other than Noel to make that flight.
This was all the serum they had?
Yes.
The one and
this
done.
Is everything in the state.
Yep.
And there were another 100,000, or I'm sorry, 1 million units were available and had been put on the first available ship out of Seattle. And they thought air had been an option and then totally ruled air out for weather reasons as much as anything. Governor Scott Bone authorized the hiring of dog teams and drivers for the trip from Nenana to Nome. The serum arrived in Nenana at 11 p.m. on January 27th, and it was given to William Wild Bill Shannon, a young mail team driver. He left Nenana with temperatures of minus 40. The weather was much worse, and when he got to Manly, he was in pretty rough shape. He couldn't have probably made it much further. Well, the next morning, Sepla left Little Creek for Nidalotto with 20 of his best dogs. He planned on, had a clever plan. That's why he had so many dogs. He was going to drop two dogs at what he would consider each rest point so on the way back he could keep adding fresh dogs to the team. The temperatures on his start were minus 30, which he was used to, but still not real pleasant. He stopped at Solomon for rest, trying not to work the dogs overly hard at the start since they'd had little training. Trail conditions forced him out onto the ice, and that was undesirable because if the wind shifted, the ice could separate from the shore, and he might be stuck out there for days if he made it off at all. Meanwhile, in spite of this terrible weather, which had almost killed Wild Bill, the serum arrived in Nolato with other mushers. It was sent on to Unalakleet and reached there at 3 a.m. on January 31st. The snow was deeply drifted from there to Shaktulik, and to save time, Sepla decided to cut across the sound to save mileage, went ahead, stayed on the ice. He was within a mile of the village, expecting to go on to Nolato, when he saw the team of Henry Ivanov going the other direction. Ivanov recognized Sep's dogs and stopped his team to hand off the package. Right as he did that, his team broke into a free-for-all. So Leonard is steering away from him, not wanting his dogs to get involved in a dogfight. And fortunately, he heard the word serum, which is what the other mother was shouting, managed to stop his dogs, which by this time were really ready to head on into town and get a rest, came back, picked up the serum, and started back. His dogs had just run 40 miles. The weather was much worse. Sepala thought he'd be going all the way to Nome, 170 miles distant, and was trying to decide how to pace that. He did set out immediately. He reached the ice on the sound, which he cut across. He made that decision, crossed the ice with Togo in loosed lead, and he trusted Togo to steer around open water. He made this section actually without incident, other than heading into a headwind at minus 30 for 43 miles along the trail. He arrived at Isaac's Point shortly after 8 p.m. He covered 86 miles at an average speed of 9 miles per hour. He slept till 2 a.m. when he set out again. The serum had to be warmed every so often anyway. Summer had decided to send out two additional teams, one driven by Ed Roan, and he went to Point Safety, and a team that Sepala had left, his spare dogs, were being driven by Gunnar Kaysen, who would proceed on to Bluff. Kaysen arrived in Bluff at 4 and requested the owner of Olson's Roadhouse, Charlie Olson, to go to Dexter's Roadhouse to meet Sepala. So they've got a pretty good relay to the end. Sep had wrapped and warmed the serum. He departed Isaac's Point. Temperatures were minus 40 with even stronger winds. His native hosts cautioned him to stay on land in this section because their experience told him the ice would break up with the winds this hard. The team struggled into the wind. A Nome Nugget report on February 2nd said Sepala had hit the worst of the blizzard at Creek River, and actually he had to stop at times and rub the dogs down to warm them up enough they could keep running. He ran into he got to the roadhouse. Charlie Olson explained what he was doing. Sepala gave him the serum, and he proceeded on. He had a 25-mile run to Bluff, and Charlie froze some fingers and his face during that run while he was caring for his dogs. Well, Olson made it to Bluff, arriving at 7:30. He and the dogs in pretty rough shape. While the serum was being warmed, Kassan helped tend Charlie's team, and then he set out for safety. The blizzard was dropping off now. The temperatures were up to 26 below, and the wind's velocity had decreased considerably, and visibility under moonlight was as good as 6 miles. Well, Kassan passed Solomon at 12:25 a.m. The wind was low enough, his tracks were visible the next morning. He arrived at Port Safety, and he said he didn't see any lights and decided to travel on to Nome and arrived there at 5:30 and was unexpected, so he had to find the doctor and wake him up. The serum was good, vaccinations began, and the serum had traveled 674 miles in 5.5 days. And that event is why we have the Iditarod race today.
Mm-hmm.
So Sepala set out for Nome, and Togo took off to chase reindeer. He thought he'd lost his best dog, but finally, February 10th, Togo comes waltzing in with the regular mail run. He'd followed the mail team home. On the 8th, a second shipment of serum, the 1 million units from Seattle, set out for Nome, and many of the same mushers were involved. It was even worse weather. There was a lot of controversy. Did Kassan skip Ed Roan so that he could get the credit? He knew what was going on and had seen the media frenzy in Nome. A lot of people believed that he went on to get the attention. The manufacturer of the serum awarded him, Kassan, $1,000. None of the other mushers shared in it. The territory of Alaska gave the mushers $25 per day, and a public donation added another $18.66. So they didn't get very much out of their efforts. All the drivers were awarded a certificate. Sepala's is currently in the UAF Museum. Well, the final point to gall the mushers was the attention given to Balto, who was credited for many of Togo and the other leaders' accomplishments. Interestingly, if you look at Leonard's very, very meticulous kennel records, Balto is never listed as a leader. So it was another one of those things. He might have been running at the front or next to the lead dog, but he was probably not the lead dog, but the media frenzy got the name Balto. It went everywhere. There's a statue of him in Central Park, and we're told that when Leonard saw that, he said it was almost more than I could stand when that farce of a dog was made into a statue. So you find some people on both sides of this part of the story, pretty partisan, but from what I've been able to find out, I think that best matches the feeling and what happened at the very end of the race.
Nick, thank you very much. Greatly appreciate this. Really do. Fairbanks, that is our show for today. You have a great day. And Nick will be back next Wednesday to give you part deuce of the great Leonard Sepala and his different adventures in Alaska. Fairbanks, you have a great day, and I'll see you tomorrow.